and welcome to We Cut Heads, a Spike Lee podcast. I'm your host, Spencer, and with me is a man claiming to be the Lord of the Horses, but I don't believe it. I don't believe in the Lord of the Horse.
Hello! Oh, don't interrupt me. I'm only the Lord of the Horses. And this is exactly what a horse looks like. A man who has a microphone. It's incredibly boring. It's not the kind of movie for fun voices. I apologize.
Yes, it's just this joy. Is a special episode for February, or we're kind of off schedule, so who cares? These will come out when they come out at this point. But this is a special episode on the Moroccan film Pegasus from 2010, directed and written by Mohamed Mouftakhir. I think that's how you say it. He directed only one more movie since 2010, called Blind Orchestra. And outside of that, he hasn't... I don't know if he, worked as a crew member on movies or not, but he's... after seeing Pegasus, I'm kind of curious what else he would want to... what other type of movie he would make. But, did you like this movie, Joel? Did you find it interesting? I was curious.
Did I like this movie? Yes, I liked it. But I think it's got some major problems that the beginning, the first half of the movie feels so weird, and then when it's almost 2 hours, so it takes about an hour to get to a place for me to be okay, now I'm actually getting what's going on here. And I don't think it should take an entire hour for something like to happen. I had problems with acting and the way it was going out there, so
it's an interesting mess. Like, this was one of the first African films I saw when I discovered Fandor had a whole bunch of them. Like, the first few I saw were Mbeki movies and Haroon and some other people. And this was the first African film I saw that feels like a Hollywood movie. Because watching it this time, it's this is kind of riffing on a De Palma type thriller a little bit. In Hitchcock territory. Well, more De Palma and Hitchcock. But, Hitchcock did get a little sleazier towards the end, but he still, never went too far. So this was kind of just interesting thing for me to, seeing, a foreign take on a psychological, thriller movie. And, this is a fourth or third time I've seen it, and every single time I watch this movie, I remember the beginning, I remember the end, but the middle is always a surprise. For some reason, I always forget the middle section.
We'll have to get into it, and yeah, I'm not sure which part
after,
you mean.
After, where is it? It's around, after 40-minute mark, when you learn that in the flashbacks the dad is the chief, and you learn, I think, around time, in the flash... we're going to spoil this movie. And this is on Fandor, unless I checked, and it's on Amazon Video. But you have to kind of look around for it, because it's kind of weird to find. And it's but around time, in a flashback, she starts taking calligraphy lessons. And then, after that, the last 10 minutes, it's for some reason.
So the point where the girl in the hospital has grown up, is no longer a child, is when.
The middle. For some reason, that part always leaves my brain. And if I didn't write down notes, I probably wouldn't have remembered it. But
that's good that a movie surprises you.
Yeah.
And over and over again.
This is not surprising, but this is Mohamed Mouftakhir's first film. And I guess, like, I can forgive some of the glaring problems a little bit, because it's his first feature film, and he had worked on some short films here and there before, but, you know, your first film is never going to be great, unless you're Orson Welles, but that's kind of like a one in a million shot. So how would you sum up this movie exactly?
So it's a movie, it's a mystery movie. We're presented with a woman who we don't know what her story is. We don't know what's going on. She's just at some sort of hospital. And she, for some reason, they want her to work on this female patient that they have locked up. Because I believe the priest says, none of us have been able to get anywhere with her. We don't even know who she is. So we start to, the movie does a lot of intercutting of like something that happened beforehand and cutting back to the modern time where the woman is talking to the girl and trying to find out what she's all about, what the problem is and stuff like that. And it's a twisty movie. Eventually you figure out, oh, this must be the girl in the flashbacks, but it starts to mess with the narrative, starts to mess with the viewer by making you wonder, wait, who is the older woman actually talking to? And, you know, there's some ghosts, or at least memory ghosts, that kind of thing. And it turns out at the end that the woman doing the interview is not actually interviewing a person. She's actually the person in the hospital. And the version that she's seeing of the troubled young woman is her daughter, I believe, yes. Right? That in the beginning of the movie, there was a girl just out there, you know, in the hallway, and there's like, whose daughter is that? Like, I don't know. We don't know what to do with her. And it's like, you abandoned her 20 years ago, which, did she have this baby?
I'm not
when
sure.
She was 12?
That's part of the questions I have, like with the structure and all that.
All right. So that's the story. It's a story that, you know, Memento style, without that that stylized dialogue that Memento has, is what's that called when
unreliable?
The narrator. Unreliable narrator, basically.
Because, like, it plays, like, I think at the 20-minute mark, you see the security footage of her interviewing the girl, and it's just her in the room by herself. So, pretty much immediately, like, 20 minutes in, this movie, it's an hour 40, you already know something's up, and it takes a while. And it kind of, like, and this time through, like, I remember that being further into the movie. But, like, this time through, it was like, oh, wow, they kind of reveal, like the big surprise that, well, what would be a big surprise kind of a bit earlier on, which is an interesting approach to throw you off. I don't think it fully works in its favor.
Nope. I don't know what was with the, like, I realize we're not getting the full story in the beginning. We don't even know if those conversations actually were happening in the beginning of the movie, or if it was just all in her head. And there's no, like, I almost think this would have benefited from, like, some flashback of, like, this is what was actually going on. But it's the acting in the beginning feels so stilted, and I can only think it's because they thought any emotion or any, like, just showing any feeling other than a general sense of, like, what's going on would be too revealing at that point in the plot or something like that. But, you know, there's that priest and that nun character, and they are just stilted. Like, they don't even make eye contact when they're talking. Like, they're just NPCs in this world. And the woman is slightly mysterious, but also we don't have any reason to think anything really weird is going on other than she seems... I mean, it feels kind of dream, like nightmare dreamish. And then even in the flashback, when we see the father and his quote unquote son, you know, they're doing it like a Terrence Malick, we're going to be quiet and kind of whisper to each other thing with beautiful shots in the background. And it just, like, I feel like if this had been American actors, we'd have been like, these are some bad actors.
It's, I don't know, it feels kind of forced. But again, this is his first feature. Yeah.
Right. Well, and like later in the movie, we have all these same actors, basically, at least up into the middle of the movie. And they do acting. Like, we see them actually performing. Well, except for that, I think the nun and priest character don't really get to do anything. But
yeah, I think really she's required to. A nurse, maybe, at the hospital. Because it's never clear, like, because the hospital is basically abandoned. It looks abandoned, which is actually, like, the odd feeling of, like, what's happening. And you call him a priest, but he... Okay, so how do you...
I mean, he's dressed like a priest, isn't he? Yeah, I forgot
the name for, like, the priest in Islam, exactly. He might be that.
Yeah,
I can't remember what the term is. But, like, there's a point before you learn, like, before, like, the twist at the end, where, like, it's insinuated that he slept with the woman. So, like, what do you think of those segments? Like,
I think that it's supposed to go back, you know, that's, we're supposed to, on a rewatch, think, well, okay, that makes sense in a, like, her not remembering that she possibly slept with somebody, or thinking that, you know, a rape could have happened in that case or something like that. It's like, oh, okay, so she was, like, projecting, or was she? I don't know. It seems weird that if she's a patient in their hospital, that she would even be allowed to go out into a, you know, to a dance party.
I'm thinking this is supposed to be, I think it's Rabat is the major city there. Because, like, they go to, like, she goes clubbing at a dance club, and there's alcohol there. So, like, I'm guessing it has to be a big city, because, like, the only other places you...
Alcohol's not really...
Well, it's a Muslim country, and alcohol's not too much of a thing. Well, it depends. Like, in Haroon movies, which are usually set in Chad, you see people drinking sometimes, but it's usually at, like, hotels where you see, like, in the background, like, white people and people from other parts of the world drinking. So, like, it kind of... Like how Christianity is kind of... where Christianity is, like, the same everywhere, more or less. Islam really takes on different cultural things depending on which country it is. And the way it's shown in this movie, it seems a little more lax than, like, Timbuktu. But it's not quite that loose either. Well, from what I've seen, like, the way it's portrayed.
I mean, what do you mean by loose compared to Timbuktu?
Well, Timbuktu, like, it's very oppressive, and, like, you get some of that feeling here with, like, the with the flashbacks where, like, there's this.
Male dominated society.
Yeah, like, this, based off of my limited knowledge of it, it felt like it's commented on, like, religion and the role of religion. And, like, how, like, the chief was embarrassed to have only daughters, and so, like, forcing his daughter to be a boy because, you know, Allah didn't, didn't bless him with a son. So, like, that feels like it's commenting on, like, religion, and there's some other stuff, and, like, maybe the guy at the hospital is a priest, or maybe not. It's never really clear, and, like, the woman clearly, I think, is, like, she could be a nun, because, like, nuns were nurses traditionally in other parts of the world, but it again, this movie doesn't really it brings up a lot of questions, but it doesn't bother answering quite a few of them. So like my favorite parts of the movie are the flashbacks. I like the because like the contrast of you have this like very blue, sterile, kind of like how in American films, like science fiction movies, are always like tinted blue and like look a certain way. And this is feel like it's aping that style. But then in flashbacks, you see this like very lush, this very lush, like village out, out in like the Sahara. And like it looks beautiful, and like the houses look beautiful, and people ride horses everywhere, and you know I like, and just like, and the family drama is interesting, but like it's definitely more lively than the hospital segments. Yeah, the modern day part.
I mean, there's nothing going on there until the end when she actually goes on this, you know, actually leaves the hospital to try to figure out what's going on. Like, then that's the only momentum in that section. Because otherwise, you know, I don't know, she's like, she went to a library. Oh, she found the book that we saw in the flashback. But, yeah, I don't know what I was going to say.
Like also, like, the flashbacks, I think the first flashback you see is the dad cutting her hair. So, like, on a rewatch, it's...
Yeah. Right, but you don't...
Yeah, well, like... Right. Yeah, well, what did you think? Like, did you realize that she was a boy in the flashbacks before it was revealed, or did you learn it at, like...
No, and in fact, when that kid, you know, who's like, she's hanging out with, which, you know, don't hang out with my daughter without my permission. No, just kidding. she, like, when he's like, you're a girl, she's like, no. I was like, yeah, she's not a girl. And I don't mean that, like, that is something I actually believe. If somebody says they're a girl or not a girl, that is their choice. But for the sake of the movie, I thought, like, oh no, are they gonna, like, is this like a gay story, like, are they young lovers or something like that? And it's like, oh, okay, no, she actually is a girl, and her father is trying to trick the village, who probably knows. He has a daughter?
Well, she has two older sisters who, like, who clearly know. Like, I think you only see them maybe two or three times. And the first time, like, it seems like a little boy is just, like, creeping on these girls, but it's not like a curious pervy way, like, the little kid way. It's more like a, like, questioning like themselves type of way, like on rewatch, like the kid performers in this movie are probably the better performers. So like she really, the young actress really gets across like the confusion of her situation.
I think that they're, you know, not quite teenage. I'm not sure what age they were supposed to be. I think that they do a pretty fine job too. A lot of, especially for the actress who's the one that's in the hospital, when we see her out in, you know, the flashback sequences, she has to do a lot of acting with her face because this movie doesn't have that much dialogue. You know, they're not spending any time telling us what's going on.
Yeah, there's a lot of whispering, as you said. And there's a Letterboxd review that says, "Why is everybody whispering?" in all caps. Which I didn't really notice until I read that review. I was like, oh, there's a lot of whispering in this movie. Oh, I remember. And the blue makes you think of David Lynch. In particular, Mohammed Drive. The street in L.A.
David Lynch's Mohammed Ali.
David Lynch movie with Billy Ray Cyrus in a bit part.
Mulholland Drive.
I didn't know that was a street until, like, last year.
It's a pretty long street. There's a lot of Mulholland Drive, so who knows how many other stories go on there. I mean, it was originally supposed to be a TV series.
I saw that off topic, but you see a street sign in Mulholland Drive, the movie, and I thought that was made for the movie, because I've never been to L.A., so... why would I know? Because I've never been to L.A.
I mean, you expect David Lynch to come up with a whole street on his own.
The mind games and like the blue feels like David Lynch, and not like not Lynchian in a way like it's used by lazy people on the internet, like mean weird. I mean, like it does feel inspired by David Lynch, and.
Why are you always subtweeting me?
You see, like, Lynchian code for this is weird. And it's like, not necessarily.
Right, exactly. You know, I mean, you shouldn't insult potential listener here. I mean, it's not... If you think of something as Lynchian, you're probably right, but you should also research things that inspired him. You know, how many other things are you Spielbergian? I guess I've heard that before. Capra-esque. Yep. Nobody says Scorsesean, but a lot of people accuse people of ripping off Scorsese.
There's no Kurosawa-esque. I guess that would be like, but then he loved John Ford, so he's very John Ford-esque.
And John Ford loved Adolf Hitler.
Like, no, he didn't. He was a conservative, but he wasn't that conservative. Well, I think his politics got confusing towards the end. But that's a whole different can of worms.
You know, in this era, I can't tell the difference between Adolf Hitler and a conservative.
But back to Pegasus. So why do you think the movie...
What's that one-star review that just popped
up? Why do you think the movie is called Pegasus? Because, like, the Pegasus... is a mythical creature, and obviously, myth, like, certain myths appear in every culture, like vampires and stuff, so, like, and sure. I'm sure the Pegasus, like, horses show up everywhere in the world, so a winged horse showing up and, like, you know, is a common thing to show up in mythologies.
Right. Well, I mean, there's a direct connection with the dialogue in the movie where... Yeah, talking about the king of horse or the lord of horses and his special black stallion, who he only cared about the stallion, he cared about nobody else, until the village arranged for some beautiful woman to, you know, and then he forgot all about his horse and married the woman. And then that woman murdered him, and the villagers discovered it, and the horse went and rolled in the lord's blood, and wings grew out of its back. So I think if I had to pick, like, a symbolism for what's going on in the movie, I wouldn't want to, because that's super cheesy. I mean, how do you feel about that?
I don't know, maybe it's like this, like, going off, like, the horse with wings that can, like, go anywhere, like, just, like, freedom, trying to escape, trying to, you know, like, you know, get out of the situation, like a very base reading. But then there are parts of this movie, because they talk about, like, sending men off to the war, which some of this movie just feels specifically Moroccan in a way. It's like doesn't connect with me. Not in a bad way. It's like this certain thing. Like, they talk about, like, sending people off to the war. It's like, I don't know what that is a reference to. It feels like something that maybe is contemporary in 2010 for Morocco, or like around that time for Morocco, to that, like, if you lived in an area, you would know what that means. But to, like, us Americans now, it's like, we like, maybe, like, war on terrorism, but I don't really know if terrorists reached, like, are in Morocco necessarily. So I really don't know, like, what that could be referring to.
I'm not sure.
Like, Morocco, based off what I know, like, what little I know, is, like, Morocco's kind of a little more stable than other countries around it. So, I don't know, maybe some shit with France, because they have a because France is still poking their head all over Africa still. So, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, we don't know any context for what time period those flashbacks are supposed to be in. The only real thing, let's assume that the stuff we see with the woman investigating is the modern day, so 29 or 2009, 2010, something like that. 20 years ago, she had a child because they say that's the child you abandoned 20 years ago. So even longer than that, because the kid is older when we see her. So let's say 25, 26. That kid didn't look little
Not
necessarily.
really.
So 26 years ago, we're talking in 2010, that would have been 1984. There's probably
Yeah.
something going on. And it was before
That's
that even.
true. Yeah, that just adds more to like this feels is referring to a Moroccan thing that if you're not from there, you won't really pick up the context of what they're referring to. But then again, at the same time, like if you're not like in a major city, then that's just then necessarily like you would have like all of modern technology. Like it's not uncommon for like the places outside of the major cities. In like in most foreign countries to not have like that much modern technology or any modern technology at all at the same time. So yeah, so time-wise, I'm not quite sure. I don't think you ever get the name of the village. It's like a blank nameless village.
Well, it's all a dream
Is it
anyways.
what part is real to you?
I feel like the flashbacks, except for the ones where she envisioned her love being the one she is having the baby with. Basically, everything else is a memory. I don't know how like this quote unquote Tito fits in though, or Tio, what was her name?
Ooh.
You know what I'm talking about? The other woman that
Oh,
like,
Ito.
yeah,
Ito.
Ito, Tio, Ito, Tito
Maybe
Fuentes.
just her jealousy of I don't know. 'Cause like she and Zaid clear have a connection, and he's like he's violating the rule like the societal rules by teaching her how to read and write, which
Sure. And the only thing I can figure is that it's Ito was her, but even before she admitted that she had slept with Zaid,
Zaid?
is it
I'm not
Zaid?
sure.
Zaid? Yeah, something like that. That she, on that night, she was telling herself that she saw Zayd having relations with another woman. And then she figures out, like, oh no, he was having relations with me. And then it turns out it's not her that she was having relations. I don't
No.
think we've actually said this, but her father was
Yeah,
the one who
because
raped her.
there are signs that he was attracted to his daughter before that, when he was teaching her how to like ride the stallion.
He was a weirdo. He's a weirdo that was like, daughter, you're now my son. If you don't ride this horse good, I'll beat the shit out of your mom. I think that's what happens,
And
right?
yeah, so like or like the first indication, like you get some of him like leering at her, and then he feels her up a little bit, while teaching her how to ride the horse, and
See, I didn't think he was feeling her up during that scene. It felt like because he put his hand on her chest, that he was noticing, like, oh no, this is going to be even harder to hide because she's developing breasts of some sort.
Yeah.
You know?
But then
Some sort of
and then, I don't know what's going on. And then things go too far because she has her first period, and then that's the one time her sister speaks, and her sister's like, this is how you wash it out. Because, like, it without saying much, yeah. like, it's really getting across, like, that's a shameful thing to them in that community, which is not that uncommon, sadly. That's still, like, that seems to still be a common attitude for certain people still. And, you know, like, you see her, like, hide her clothes she got bloody, like, in a hole in the house, which, is she gonna go back to them yeah. later, or is, like, or throwing away? I thought she's throwing away. Like, is she just trying to hide it so that her dad doesn't see that she's reached that point?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, she's probably feeling confused herself at that, you know, with that much gaslighting going on. It's like, my father says I'm a boy. I have to be a boy. It doesn't make any sense for me to experience any of that. Exactly. We've all been there.
But outside of the Lynch and De Palma stuff, like, it just also kind of reminds me of this other African film, I think it's Tunisian or Algerian, called The Road to Love, which is one of the few LGBTQ movies from this region. Because they're more in the sub-Sahara region of Africa, like Nigeria and Kenya and stuff. But, like, there aren't too many in the Sahara, more Muslim region. But The Road to Love has some crossover, except it's about two men who are falling in love with each other, kind of, sort of. It's kind of like this. It's similar to this, where it's, like, it's not everything fully connects, and, like, it also feels like a first movie or, like, an early movie, but it does share some similar DNA. And The Road to Love, I think, is yeah. on Fandor. It's a pretty good movie. But, it also deals, like, being gay in a Muslim community and kind of the complications of that. And this deals with, I felt that with when they were teenagers, when Zayd and the woman is Rihanna and her... Which, I guess, so I'm trying to figure out, so, like, is that the name, did Zayd give her that name in the past, or that's just her memory?
No, I think it's just her, okay. her actual but, name, yeah.
Where am I going with this? Oh, yeah, but when they're, like, teenagers, and she's still dressed like a boy, and, like, they're, like, her weird, energy, like, her knowing she's attracted to him but can't really do anything about it, reminds me of The Road to Love, because that's kind of the dynamic where the guy, the main, like, what the one guy is Tunisian, both guys are Tunisian, but one guy lives in Paris, and the one guy who lives in Paris has a girlfriend, and he's convinced himself he's straight, but throughout the whole movie, like, the guy he's working his project with is telling him, no, you have feelings for me, just deal with it and admit it. And this kind of similar relationship of, like, Zayd being like, he knows how she feels, but she can't really bring herself to admit it.
You know, he should just leave it alone. It's a bad situation. And you know what does he get for his troubles? He gets his
throat slashed. Well, he goes off to war. Yeah.
By her foot.
Whatever. Yeah, that's what they say. But,
they go to quote unquote war, aka throat slash sea.
You think Ito, the other girl, was like her feminine side, like her remembering, like, splitting up her feminine side and masculine side?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, her talking about, like, she was a beautiful woman and she didn't really exist. It's like this version of her she didn't allow her to see. And it, like, it knew it existed. Yeah, that fits even better into the whole, like, it was her the whole time thing going on. Have you seen the movie, it was, El secreto. The secret in their eyes.
Sounds vaguely familiar.
It was pretty popular, and then it had a remake with Chadwick Boseman and Julia Roberts in it. That's a movie that plays a lot like this, where it's a lot of modern time stuff, and we have flashbacks to when the actors were younger, and there's this kind of mystery, and then it has a big twist at the end kind of thing. It was reminding me of that, except the thing that this doesn't do, that one does, is you have an affection for the characters in the, mm-hmm. the modern version of them pretty much from the beginning, because they're working like in a bureaucracy and stuff like that. But this movie was trying to trick us into think a certain thing about this stuff, and that movie doesn't have like a "this is what actually happened" situation.
Oh, and perhaps another movie springs up to me for me.
Halloween 3.
I think I'm not sure how you say it, but it's the first Saudi movie directed by a woman. But it's a coming of age movie about a girl and her mom and her dad, who has a bunch of wives, and her mom is like, something like that. The cover is a Muslim girl riding a bike or with a bike. It's I think it's pretty good to. I like it a lot overall, but a little. But there's a.
Hey, you're in that world.
But there's a part in the movie in like the first 5 minutes where she's walking to school, and like and the girl's supposed to be like 12 or 13, and a construction worker cat calls her, and he says like something like, "I want to touch your apple buds," or something like that, or
that's hot.
Something like he refers to her breasts as apples, and she's like 12. And so they're like, "Oh god, this is creepy." But it's only like real creepy moment in the whole movie. But like that made me think of like when the dad like notices her breasts when she's on a horse. Except it's not like he's not catcalling his daughter like that.
Just gotta get rid of another daughter. That's
so. And when she goes back to the village as an adult, that whole sequence. So she sees Zaid again, but he can't be alive. So it's his ghost or his memory or something like that. And he says it's his shadow. Yeah. And so that got me thinking, like, is he supposed to be like a djinn? Or like something like that? Because like djinn, it turns out that's kind of a more complicated, like, creature being than I realized, and right. So I think maybe it could.
I mean, that's part of the part
so
of the
maybe it could
religion,
like be referenced to djinn, because like sometimes like I hear people say djinn, like depending on where I remember Kumail Nanjiani talking about like what like the djinn in Pakistan is like are invisible spirits that will test you in your faith, and that feels kind of like. Maybe Zaid was like a djinn of some sort, because he says he is his shadow. He's not, or maybe because, but then again, the movie doesn't really explain any that much, so I'm not sure.
I mean, who knows if that like that at that point when she actually is leaving? Like I said, it wouldn't make sense if she's this patient that they have that she'd just be walking out of the hospital anyways. So who knows if that actually happened? It's probably just in her memory. You know, like my vision of what he would have looked like if he had, you know, survived this quote unquote war. Like he's, you know, he's got the crutch under his thing. He looks like he's missing a leg and stuff. He's like, "No, this never happened. Like I never existed. The horse meat.
Yeah.
They're all
before
ghosts
that,
in
like,
her brain."
Which is the library, looking at the horse book that keeps showing up all over the place. There's this crazy little sequence of stuff fading in, where it goes from her she's in her bed, then it fades into a black stallion that fades into her at the hospital and fades back into the horse, and the horse falls mm-hmm. out. Fades into a horse in the hallway of the hospital, approaching her and her cell. And it's like this really, jarring, like there are no hard cuts. It's all like fades into each other, like the dream sequence in Drunken Angel, where it's like there are no cuts. It's just all these fades of Toshiro seeing himself in a coffin on a beach. But the horse in the hallway. This is after 2009, so makes me think did the Muhammad see Rob Zombie's Halloween too? Because the end of the movie has a similar image of a horse in a hallway, where in this it's the horse is a black horse in a dark hallway, and in the Halloween 2 it's a white horse in a white hallway approaching.
I mean, I can name 100 movies that have horses and hallways. No, not
really.
I do feel like it's an image I've seen.
But it's just interesting, they're very close together and have almost identical sequence. Yeah. Well, not sequence, but almost identical.
Yes, he was like, I really enjoyed what Mr. Zombie has done.
I like Halloween, that Halloween, too. I haven't seen the old one.
I haven't seen all of them, or either of them, all the way through. I've seen the first one to the point where the little kid was like, I'm going to start hurting animals. Like, yeah, I know that's a thing. I don't need to see it ever. Actually, never mind. It was the Danny Trejo death scene where I was like, a spoiler for that, where I was like, you can't kill Danny Trejo. This movie's over.
I have a weird relationship with that movie, but we don't have time to get into that. I find it weirdly comforting,
mm-hmm.
but I had to. Yeah,
that is weird. You should see.
I don't know why. But I find it really comforting, even though I have a lot of issues with it. What do you think of the imagery of horses? Because it's obviously, I think, it's supposed to be symbolic of something. What do you think the horses, or do you think it's just like a Tarkovsky thing of horses look cool on camera?
I'm not sure. I mean, horses are big in certain locations, you know. Maybe this is just happens to be one of those places. Like, I'm thinking of what's a movie we watched recently with the not Taliban but Taliban like people
Timbuktu?
Taking over that village, like the cattle there, and you know, it doesn't feel that weird if there was like this like importance set to horses too. But I don't know. You know, they treat it like a sacred animal.
Because I guess on a basic.
There's. I was thinking there's not that much like religion.
It's kind
talk.
Of hinted
like,
at a little.
You were saying like. I mean, he's talking about the Lord of Horses. Like that's something they actually like. I don't know if that is part of the religion. I could be totally wrong. It doesn't seem like it would be though.
Part of me thinks it might be just like another name for God, potentially. Because, you know how, you know, in Christianity there's a bunch of different names for God. You know, there's the Holy Trinity, which is a whole weird, complicated thing, and then there's, I lost it. Like, Yahweh, Jehovah. Like, in the Bible, there are multiple. Uh-huh. The Bible has multiple names for God, so maybe is this another name for God potentially? And horses are kind of it seems to be horses are necessary to their survival, or it's such a sign of wealth.
Mm.
But then again, you don't see much of the village, so I don't. And it's her memory, so it does make sense if she's the daughter of the richest man in the village. Then, of course, they'd have horses. I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out, if this movie, it doesn't really all connect. But at the same time, I kind of like the wild ambition of trying to tell, for your first feature film, tell a really complicated story like this. at the same time.
Yeah, I understand what it's like, and like you, I would be interested to see what else you get from this filmmaker. It's just this particular movie reminded me of a bunch of other stuff, and yeah, like I said, I had problems with acting going on there. A little too muddled for me, but I still think that I would be interested in something else the filmmaker did.
The film in Morocco has a pretty good film industry. It's not as prolific as like Nollywood or anything like that, but there's still a good deal of good deal of films that are made in Morocco. And there's another Moroccan film that I couldn't find, but it's like comedy. It is called that. What a Wonderful World from 2006, and it's a black comedy. And in my Letterboxd review, I don't remember too much from it besides enjoying it, but my Letterboxd review says it feels like if Seijun Suzuki made a comedy. So if that sounds appealing to you, look for it. I don't know where that might be on Fandor still, but I don't really know. But if you're interested in like watching a Lynchian De Palma-ish like psychological thriller from their Morocco and their culture and like their issues, check this movie out. It's definitely not perfect. It doesn't fully connect it or anything, but it's still like this pretty cool like this take on like the like a psychological thriller that like we, you know, if you're listening to this, you've probably seen you know, quite a few from like Hollywood or Americans or British filmmakers, but like I haven't seen too many not from this haven't seen too many from outside of America, so you know, I'm always interested in like how like that would how that would be interpreted. So there are other 2010 movies. Oh, and I should bring up the company who put this out on DVD, Global Lens. They do a lot of international movies. They do a lot of Middle Eastern and African films, and you can buy their stuff on Amazon. And I have just one of their movies, Dakan, pretty good movie, but like the video quality is never that good, but they're kind of only ones who will like release these movies. I don't know if they're still active anymore, but for a stretch they were doing a good job of releasing Middle Eastern and African films, and so yeah.
Well, I've been told that physical media is
a lot of their stuff is on Amazon streaming, just the video quality is kind of iffy depending on the movie. Which I wish someone like Criterion maybe could like get their rights and maybe clean up a bunch of their stuff with all that, you know, money they're gonna make from Marriage Story and shit on Blu-ray coming up pretty soon.
Well, they're working with Netflix now, so I think we're just gonna get like Adam Sandler Criterion movies.
Uncut Gems should be in Criterion.
Let me rephrase what I meant. Netflix, Adam Sandler.
No. But watch African films. Look for them. They're easier to access than you think, but you also have to do some legwork to find some at the same time. 2010 movies.
All right, so we were talking about it. There are some interesting choices from 2010, but I think it's, you know, just my personal list. I think it's really weird that I watched so many documentaries from this year, and I think I watched them that year. I don't know if I was, like, trying to see as many as I could. And I took a documentary class, but I don't think it was that year. None of these were in the class, at least. So I'm just going to mention the ones that I watched because I don't really talk about that. So 2010, Exit Through the Gift Shop. That was a pretty popular one at the time. It's kind of a docudrama because the person who is making the documentary, becomes the subject of the documentary, and it's a commentary on art and merchandising and, you know, the whole world there. And it's actually really entertaining. There's a guy who's in line to see the opening of a art exhibit who says, "Nah, bro, I don't know anything about the artist. I just read about it in LA Weekly, and I thought, yeah, I'm going to have to check this out, bro." He says bro twice, and I find that really entertaining. But anyways, Exit Through the Gift Shop is good. I watched Cena, apparently, which is... That got made in... That's a documentary that got made into a movie, I think. Or at least a movie based on the guy that the documentary is based on. I remember liking this documentary a lot. I don't watch racing. I have no interest in that stuff like that. But they made Senna seem like a very interesting guy. And he had a very tragic ending, spoiler for real life. Tabloid, Errol Morris documentary. This woman's story is interesting. The documentary gets kind of boring, though, because while the beginning part, you know, this is the woman that kidnapped a missionary, or did she? I don't know. We hear two sides of the story. And then at the end, I think she talks about cloning her dogs or something like that. It's really, it gets, you know, it just kind of runs out of steam after the first part of the documentary. But it's, you know, it's entertaining. Light watch.
Wait, isn't Errol Morris canceled because he did that documentary with Steve Bannon to some people or some shit? American Dharma, because he gave him a platform, quote unquote, but people I know who have seen American Dharma say, like, he challenges Steve Bannon. It's like people were criticizing it without seeing it.
I mean, yeah, it's a documentary filmmaker. It's like the people posting that criticism, I want to know, have they ever seen a documentary before? Because it's not... Most documentaries aren't like light interpretations of a subject that, you know, just being there. Most of them have a platform that they're trying to set forward. Speaking of which, Restrepo has one that's definitely comes off as kind of pro-military in the beginning, but you quickly get the idea that, like, to see the tragedies that are happening in the lives of these soldiers in Afghanistan, a war that's still going on, by the way. it was really good, and it's affecting. And the last one I'll mention is Werner Herzog's Happy People, A Year in the Taiga, which I think was also a TV series that just got put out as a movie. And it is, there's not much that happens in the movie. You know, he does Werner Herzog. He just spends some time with these people and kind of lets them talk. And, you know, they seem kind of weird and stuff like that. But there's something so enjoyable about his documentaries. Happy People is definitely worth a watch. I remember back in the day it was on Netflix. I don't know if it's available. It says Tubi TV.
Tubi has all kinds of great stuff. From the 80s called Bubblegum Crisis that I started watching.
For a different project we might be working on, I typed in Vampire, and there was so much good stuff. I was like, whoa. Anyways.
You have other stuff in documentaries, or that's it?
Yeah, I'll take a break. I mean, Joan Rivers, Babies. Okay. Yeah, that's, you know,
done. That's the year of Inception, which I left early because my dad called me midway through. He's like, I locked myself out of the house. And so I got to leave a movie I wasn't that interested in. I went because my friends wanted to go. And when I got the call, I was like, oh, sorry, I have to leave early.
I love Inception.
So I watched it later. I watched it later on VOD and fell asleep.
It is about dreams.
That Ellen Page is in that? I kind of don't remember too much. Okay.
Yes.
In 2010, I was super into Korean movies. That's when I rewatched Old Boy, and that kind of kicked off the whole thing of me watching every Korean movie I could see. And so 2010 had quite a few. It had My favorite Korean movie, I Saw a Devil, which is, I always like to say it's like the non-operatic version of Old Boy. It's dealing with like revenge in a very big way, but it's not like this classy movie. So it's a very brutal, ugly movie dealing with revenge, and it has even the lead from Old Boy playing the opposite. Well, he's Old Boy's not so great, but here he's playing like an absolute monster, and it feels like just put it lightly.
You mean he is totally the bad guy in this
Yeah,
movie as opposed to
old
Old
boy,
Boy?
he has issues, but he's redeemable here. He's just a horrible human being. Yeah, I Saw a Devil. It's not for the faint of heart. It really goes for it, in every way
Yeah.
possible. But it's my favorite Korean movie, and it's just so fucking good. Then there's The Man from Nowhere, which is it's more just an action movie, but I just like this action movie a whole lot, and like there's a great knife fight towards the end, and there's it's just like really well made, like high production action movie that I highly recommend. A Man from Nowhere. There's Bedevil, another Korean revenge movie. This one about women, and I don't remember too much from it besides I didn't like the end because it got kind of a little stupid. Because it kind of changed genres almost entirely. But before that, like it's a really interesting revenge movie that stands out in a good way. And there's a re.
It becomes a musical.
I won't spoil what it turns into, but it kind of makes a shift into like, what? This doesn't fit. And there's a remake. There's a Korean movie from the 60s called The Housemaid that went to Cannes, and I think went to Cannes. But anyway, it was a big deal back then, and there's a remake in 2010 that is very good. That was on Amazon, no, on Netflix for a long time. But The Housemaid is a really good, well-made, like, I guess you'd call it the remake on Iraq thriller. Closer to that, but if you're into that stuff. And then a Spanish movie called The Last Circus, which is about Spain, like Spain going, like it's about a whole bunch of things with like Spain's politics, with like one character representing like Francisco Franco, one character representing fascists, who are the opposite, the royalty. I forgot the other political side, but like kind of like it's playing with that, and it's like very bawdy and ridiculous. And there's some Almodovar actors in Last Circus, and I have too much trauma to see here. A Screaming Man by Mohammad Salah Haroon, which I talked about on FlixWise Canada. That movie's kind of a masterpiece about war and family and what war can do to a family, and a whole lot of other things. And that's a great African film, which we won't talk on here because I talked about it already on another show. And the last one is Uncle Boonby, Who Can Recall Past Lives. I don't even know how to explain it. It's more just like an art house thing. I don't know really how to even get into this movie besides like if you're open to like abstract movies that don't really tell you anything, give this movie a shot. And if it connects with you, like the last 5 minutes might make you cry. But people like I heard for years people call this movie like amazing, like one of the best movies of the last decade. And when I finally saw it, I was like, yeah, I see what they're talking about. It really is that good, at least to me. If you're not into that stuff, then don't really bother. I'm going to try to pronounce the director's name, but that's it. This will come out shortly after we record this, so that'll be Bamboozled. And then Bamboozle, and then we're gonna end Dancer in the Dark is coming up soon, which was a fun one to record, even though two of the three people enjoy well like that movie more than someone.
It was a perfectly good version of this porridge too hot, this porridge is too cold, this porridge is just right.
Yeah. It's coming up. Yeah, I think that's it. And, watch more African films. Watch Atlantis on Netflix if you haven't yet. Because it's going to get a Blu-ray on the Criterion this year, so maybe it'll be taken off there. Yeah, also, which
Which
is
is
great.
awesome.
And so,
Yeah. I was not expecting that to happen. Because how many African films does Criterion actually have as part of their numbered collection?
Black Girl and Z, although Z is a Greek
Correct.
director making a movie in Algeria, so some people, I don't know if I could really consider an Algerian movie though. Kinda yes, kinda no. That's really up. That's debatable. So Black Girl, Z, and the Tookie Bookie's part of a box set.
If Z is the one I'm thinking of, I had no idea it was African.
I have to look it up again. But yeah, it won the Best Foreign Film Oscar for Algeria. Although it's, I'm not saying it's a bad movie. I'm just saying, like, does it really count it as an African film? I'm not sure if it counts or not. That's a debate. That's a debate for another time. But yeah, I don't think it's, yeah, Tookie Bookie's on a separate thing, and that's it. And then Atlantics. I think that's it. Nothing else. Yeah, so.
Yep.
Criterion, step
That's
up your
it.
game. Come on.
It's like Chinese film and not Hong Kong film, just from outside of China. There's
Yeah,
just
they
not that
have
much.
Went in the Mood for Love, and that's kind of it.
I consider that to be a Hong Kong film.
I can't think of anything else. I have a box set,
Yep.
the Scorsese World Cinema thing. That's some Chinese movies, but that's not a numbered spine though. So I really aren't. I
Right.
can't think of any. Then oh, did you no? Police Story is a Hong Kong then. Yeah.
Yep, Hong Kong action. Yep.
Yes, Criterion, step up your game. Yeah, we know you love Mizoguchi, but you can cool on Mizoguchi.
We also know you like re-releasing movies that you've already released but not previously on Blu-ray, I guess.
Yeah.
And being like,
Also,
see?
wait, never mind. I was gonna say they could re-release Sweetbacks, but Vinegar Syndrome kind of stole their thunder, so because that was a Criterion movie back in the day,
That's a
yeah.
good label.
But it was on
Really?
the Criterion Laserdisc era, I think.
Oh,
Yeah,
that's
there's
awesome.
they had a lot of stuff back then that they've lost all the rights to. Anyway, so that's it for Pegasus. See you guys next time for Bamboozled or Dancing in the Dark, whichever.
The show's email is highandlowpod@gmail.com. It made no sense to change email, so it's the same feed. The show can be found at podbean.com, and Spotify, and other places you can find podcasts. Please rate and review whenever possible. The logo is by Josh Hollis. The music is by James Fell. And thank you for listening.